Good Wednesday afternoon, everyone. 3:08 on News Talk Radio, 580 CFRA. And I'm Rob Snow, and welcome to the healthiest hour on radio. Dr. Barry Dworkin is here in the Hal Anthony studio, and we'll take any health-related questions that you might have. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, or 1-800-580-CFRA. But we do this from time to time. Every now and then, Barry gets an unusual case in his practice, and you have to kind of figure out what is going on. We call it the patient of the week. We haven't done this in a long time, but
right.
So Barry gets a rather unusual set of circumstances presents itself, and we want you to try and play medical detective, if you will. You're like House. You're trying to figure out what is going on with this person. So let's get the bare basics on what actually presented to you in your practice, and we'll see how well the listeners do. And I'm just trying to round up a prize, maybe some 67 tickets or something like that. We'll go down into the prize closet and see what we can find for folks. So what's going on?
Okay, this is a 52-year-old woman who was been a patient of mine for quite some time, healthy, latest blood work was normal, cholesterol's good, no diabetes, no high blood pressure, in general, just really good.
Okay.
All the screening tests done, colonoscopies, everything. She's very happy and healthy. Goes down south to some southern island down in the Caribbean and starts to develop chest pain. And she first thinks it's indigestion and says the pain sometimes goes to my back, goes down both my arms at times, a bit short of breath. And then it goes away. But she's still down there, and then it happens again. So she goes to this clinic. Clinic does things.
On this island.
On this island. And does an electrocardiogram. They're worried about her heart. Electrocardiogram is normal. Okay. But she's still having the chest pain. And she's getting more uncomfortable, more short of breath. And then she ends up going to a local hospital there.
Okay.
And in the local hospital, they say, we think you're having a heart attack. And so they try to confirm this by doing a blood test to look for various cardiac enzymes. The names of them are not that important other than to say that those enzyme levels were elevated. So they go, aha.
They were elevated.
They were elevated.
Okay.
And they went, aha, I think you're having a heart attack.
Hmm.
They then take her, because if you're having a heart attack, they take her to the lab to do an angiogram. That's the dye that you use to look at the coronary arteries to see what's going on, because you're having a heart attack, usually you would detect blockages in the arteries. No blockages.
Hmm.
Arteries are completely clear. Heart looks normal. Heart is functioning normal, but nevertheless, she had this pain with these elevated enzymes. So the physician that was there refused to believe that it was anything but a heart attack. But when I looked at the information here, I wasn't convinced that she had a heart attack. So the question I have for people, our listeners, are if we make the assumption that this is not necessarily a heart attack, what else could it have been? And what questions could you ask? And also, what other tests might you want to do in order to figure out what else it may be? And my reasons, again...
But, I mean, she's had a blood test. She's had an EKG. She's had all these
EKG was negative.
Scopes and cameras and everything stuck inside of her. I mean... I don't know what else there is to do if you've done all that.
Well, there are a few other things that you can do.
Okay.
And also just thoughts that people might have about what they think that she might have also had. Because when she was discharged...
Angina.
No, that's the same thing with the heart.
Okay.
But when she was discharged from the hospital, they did not discharge her with any medications for her heart. They gave her Coumadin, which is a blood thinner. And... sent her on her way. So she was not put
I suspect that you find that abnormal.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah. If you suspect someone who's had a heart attack, you usually have them on a medication called Plavix afterwards for at least a year. And so she's on Coumadin, and that's pretty much all that they sent her off with. No statin medication, for cholesterol, no beta blockers, which are usually used for somewhat nothing. Just sent off, said, we think you had a heart attack. But really,
here's a blood thinner. Good luck.
Here's a blood thinner that's not usually used for heart attacks.
Right.
So that's the story, and this is still an evolution. This is I've done the things. You know, you can even say who you would want to send.
You know
the person
what's wrong with her. Right?
I have a very good suspicion of what I think is what she had and potentially still has.
Okay.
And so it's a little bit more difficult. So people can really, in this case, they can sort of put out some ideas of what they think she might have had, and also any specialist that they may want her to see to try and figure things out. I'm not, you know, you don't have to be specific about type of tests. We can certainly take the process of how you would go about trying to figure out what she may have had.
Okay. So think about that, and while we do that, we'll take a call from Elizabeth, who has a problem with tailbone pain. Elizabeth.
Hi.
Hi.
I actually called Dr. Barry a little while ago about tailbone pain that I've had, and I wasn't sure what it had been related to.
Right.
I had just gone back to work after having twins. And so anyway, I'd seen my family doctor, and they did an X-ray, and I do have a follow-up appointment scheduled with her mid-March, but the nurse called and said that I have the results of the X-ray just showed wear and tear on my lower back.
Right.
So I guess my question is two parts. Is lower back the same as your tailbone? And I guess the second part is, what questions now should I ask my doctor to do? Because, I mean, the pain's not going away. I asked the nurse if there's anything in the meantime I could do, and she said it's basically just a result of, you know, as we're getting older and this, that, and the other thing. But, I mean, I can't imagine people having to live with this type of pain,
right.
You know, when you're anyway, so I'm just wondering if there's any further tests I should ask for, or if any further investigation I should talk to my doctor about when I go for my follow-up.
Yeah, the first is that the wear and tear aspect has nothing to do with the pain that you're experiencing, because that's usually the result of what we call degenerative disc disease. Happens to everybody as we get older, and it is just the bone wearing down and the discs wearing down a bit just with everyday use. But secondly, the pain that you're having is further down. It's at the base of the spine, right at the coccyx, which is those tiny bones that are at the end of the spine or the bottom of the spine. So there are a few things that still can be done, especially for pain relief. One of the things that I would say is that if they X-ray is not going to help for this, there are a few other things. One is you could do what's known as a bone scan to see if there's any inflammation within the bone itself. And that is a scan that can be done outside of the hospital. It's one way to look for inflammation, infection, or damage to bone in that area. So that might be helpful in trying to determine what's going on in that site. Secondly, for pain relief, there are interventional radiologists in Ottawa that do injections. They use their imaging to guide the needle into the right spot to try to either deaden the nerve in the area, eliminate the pain, or reduce the pain so the person's quality of life is improved. And they do this kind of stuff for facet joint injections, for people who are having back pain for which medications really don't work that well. And so that is another option to look at, but first you have to have a diagnosis. And so the scan would be helpful. And I think that would be the next step anyway, because you want to know if the bones in that area are inflamed. Because if they're not, then you're dealing with connective tissue in the area, for which the injection still could be helpful, but at least you would know that it's not the bones that are causing the pain. And again, it's very important to have a diagnosis, because diagnosis usually does help in determining the course of action on how to treat something. So that would be the next step to, when you speak to your family doctor, potentially getting a bone scan to look at that specific area.
So an X-ray wouldn't have picked up on this regardless, even if they had, I guess, targeted the right area.
That's correct. An X-ray really doesn't pick up very much for the coccyx. It's very tiny, whereas a bone scan will literally shine up, because this is a scan that actually lights up the area that's affected.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Good luck, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Call us back if things continue to trouble you. 318-580-CFRA. Back with more of your phone calls for Dr. Barry Dworkin. Yes, we are playing the medical diagnosis of the week. Case of the week. So if you have any insight on that, we welcome your calls. 521-TALK, star 581, 800-580-CFRA. Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. It's the Wednesday House Call. Patient of the week is a 52-year-old female. Happy, healthy female. No underlying chronic medical conditions. So she goes to the Caribbean, starts suffering from chest pain, shortness of breath, and some tests are done that show elevated enzymes, and at the hospital in the Caribbean, they suspect that she's had a heart attack. But Dr. Dworkin suspects something else is actually going on. He has a very good idea, he says, what's going on. He's a longtime patient of Dr. Dworkin. So what do you think might be going on? If you've been listening in, you have some ideas. Gary.
Yes. Good afternoon, guys.
Hello,
afternoon.
Gary.
Just a couple of questions, and then I will try to give you an answer.
Sure.
Would this have happened even if she did not go down, down on her vacation?
The fact that this happened in the Caribbean, does that have anything
to do with it? No, I don't think it has anything to do with where she was. I think it would have happened anyway.
Okay, well, I was thinking about maybe is the altitude or, you know, like the change in, you know.
In climate or what have you.
That kind of thing, since there's no history of
right.
this. Would this be fairly common?
The condition itself is, you do see it from time to time. I wouldn't say it's overly common, but it's not something that sticks out as being rare.
Oh, God. Well, too much.
But she didn't have heat stroke or
anything
like that.
No, in fact, she thought she was having heartburn, so she started taking stuff for her stomach. I mean, it's sort of a classic presentation of people when they do have a heart attack, right? That's the type of stuff that maybe I'm getting some heartburn. I'm getting, they don't think that it's a heart attack right away. Mm. But in this case, don't think it was.
All right. Okay. Let's go from Gary to Jerry. Jerry, are you with me, Jerry?
I am.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jerry. What's your question?
My question to the doctor was, could you tell me something about diabetic peripheral neuropathy?
Sure.
What would you like to know?
Well, I've had all the symptoms, hot and cold, sporadic pain, swelling of the feet, loss of feeling. I have been prescribed Cymbalta,
mm-hmm.
which I haven't bothered to take because what I've seen on the net... make it a nice drug. In the meantime, playing around with an anti-smoking drug.
So now, do you have a diagnosis of diabetes?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
For quite some years.
Okay. So diabetic peripheral neuropathy is the result of diabetes that tends not to be controlled very well. And what happens is that the small blood vessels that supply and maintain the nerves that are in this case, the lower legs, tend to get blocked up. And when they get blocked up, less blood flow goes to the nerves. The nerves start to die. And when the nerves start to die, their ability to provide your brain with information regarding the position of your leg, where your foot is when it hits the ground, and the pain fibers as well, start to activate. And so you end up very uncomfortable. There is pain because the nerves are being damaged, tissue is being damaged, and also because we have the nerves are responsible for different functions. That is proprioception, which simply means to know where your foot is when you're stepping. Sharp and light touch and vibration sense. All those particular aspects of sensory nerves start to fail, and as a result, you end up with this type of condition. There are treatments for it in terms of minimizing pain. There are specific medications out there that are designed to treat peripheral neuropathy and diabetic neuropathy. But ultimately, it does boil down to if someone is smoking, to stop smoking, because that contributes to a tremendous amount to that damage. Tight control of blood sugar to get blood sugars down to as close to normal as possible, and controlling blood pressure, and also cholesterol levels. I mean, all these things, again, just as you would be treating heart disease, you'd be treating this in a similar way to minimize the damage. But the problem with peripheral neuropathy, especially diabetic neuropathy, when it starts, a lot of the times you may be able to stop the progression or slow the progression and even get some function back if the blood vessels improve or become more patent. But ultimately, once there's damage, there's always going to be damage. So this is the important thing with diabetes, is you want to treat as aggressive as possible in order to minimize the damage so that you don't have to deal with this when it happens.
All right. We'll pick it up after the news at 3:30 Wednesday House Call on 580 CFRA. 339 580 CFRA. And I want to take Frank's phone call. Dr. Dworkin, very quick. He's been waiting quite some time. Frank, go ahead.
Okay, doctor, a couple of quick questions.
Sure.
Any fluid on the lungs when that check was done?
No.
Okay. This lady suffered from any major infections or viruses?
No infection, no viruses.
Well, it sounds like atrial fib to me, but I...
Her EKG was normal, though. So no atrial fib. But
okay.
I'm glad you're asking those questions.
Thanks,
Frank. That's good.
Thanks for the call, Frank. Anything else?
No, that's fine.
You're feeling fine?
Thank you very much.
Okay, Frank.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Let's, for folks who may be just tuning in, we're doing a patient of the week. Your chance to kind of play Dr. Dworkin, if you will. You know, you've always had the action figure at home. Now you have a chance to actually play Dr. Barry Dworkin. 52-year-old female, healthy, happy, longtime patient of Dr. Dworkin's, goes to the Caribbean, where she's having a shortness of breath and chest pains. They do an EKG. It's normal. But after it happens again, she goes to the hospital, and there's a suspicion that she may have had a heart attack, so they do some workup, and she has some kind of elevated enzyme. Yeah,
cardiac enzymes were elevated.
So that would seem to indicate that she has had a heart attack. But they do further tests, no blockages, and they discharge her with giving her only a blood thinner, which you say is
not
the gold standard.
Yeah, they give her
right?
warfarin or Coumadin.
So what do you think is going on with this particular woman? That's as far as we are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you have any other health-related questions, feel free to ask them to Dr. Dworkin. Charles.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Charles.
Did she have a blood clot or a pulmonary embolism?
She had no blockages, you said.
No blood clot noted, but I'm glad you asked about pulmonary embolism because that's what I think she likely had.
A pulmonary embolism.
Yeah.
Oh,
Charles, what makes
well
you think
done.
She had that?
Because I had the same thing back in June of last year, and it started, the symptoms sounded similar. I thought it might have been a heart attack.
Right.
Pain in the left side. But it turned out it was a blood clot that started in my leg mm-hmm. and traveled up to my lungs.
Now, she doesn't have any clot in her legs, but the thought was that she can also have a clotting disorder.
Okay.
And that can give the symptoms that she described. She also described that her blood pressure was, when she was in hospital, blood pressure was going up and down. It couldn't be controlled very well. And that's sometimes something you see with pulmonary embolus. What is happening now is that we need to find out if she had one, whether if she had a pulmonary embolus, it's a good thing she's on Coumadin because that's what you have to use to prevent a clot. Although they didn't diagnose her with a pulmonary embolus, nor did they even think of that was the case.
What we call in golf a good miss.
That's a good miss.
Wow.
Yeah,
I was misdiagnosed as well.
Yeah, it can be a very difficult diagnosis to make if you don't. Think of that as part of your differential.
So what is an
diagnosis?
Embolism?
An embolism is, in this case, it's a clot that has traveled up and lodged into the lung.
Okay.
And that can give you shortness of breath. It can give you chest pain.
So when you say chest pain, where would it be? Would it be below the rib cage?
No, above the rib cage.
Above the
rib cage, in this case, she felt it in her mid-chest. And it can also cause, in some cases, it can cause an elevated cardiac enzyme. So that can happen.
Which would
as
indicate
well.
A heart attack.
Which
so
would indicate
part,
a heart
part
attack.
Part of the complication in diagnosing
right.
this particular.
But she had again.
Condition.
She had, and she brought the CD of the angiogram. When you look at the arteries being filled, they filled up beautifully. There was nothing in this to show any blockages. Nothing to explain to affirm their diagnosis.
Okay.
So yeah.
Charles, what did they do to you once this was diagnosed?
I was put on Coumadin as well.
Okay.
And really nothing else that I could do is just have my blood checked regularly.
Okay.
And yeah.
And you're feeling fine now?
Yeah, fine now. I still have blood clots, but they're very small. It's not a massive blood clot that I had originally.
Okay. Okay. Well, listen, very well done, Charles.
Yeah.
Hang on the line, okay?
Okay.
All right.
So the end thing for this is that in order to find out what exactly is going on, I've sent her to the thrombosis unit to do an evaluation.
Where is that?
That's at the Ottawa Civic.
Okay.
And also, I've asked the radiologist about whether doing a special type of CT scan called a spiral CT would be of any help because it was a week since she had had the the chest pain and whether that would help or not. So I'm waiting to hear back whether that's something that would be helpful in diagnosing a pulmonary embolus. And I've sent it to a cardiologist to be able to confirm what the status of her heart is. Okay. Because, again, for insurance purposes and like, you want to have an actual diagnosis.
So wouldn't you give her something like Plavix or whatever? What do they, you know, to clear that out? Can you clear out that clot? Take something that just kind of is like Javex for the Drano for the veins there, you know?
There are certain things you can use. One of them called tissue plasminogen activator, or TPA, which is given if you suspect that happening. Well, this is what's usually used to clear out a coronary artery.
Okay.
Be able to do that. The problem, though, is that most clots that are already formed, especially if they're formed now for a few days, it's not going to work. And secondly, if you don't know the extent of the clot, then the other problem is you may create what's known as what's called shower emboli, meaning that you break it up. And it's like a comet coming into the Earth's atmosphere and then breaking up into thousands of pieces and all hitting the ground. Well, that's the same kind of thing that could happen in the lung, which is something you don't want to have happen.
I see. Okay.
So a lot of times you use the Coumadin. It prevents further clots from occurring, and the body gradually reabsorbs the clot that is there. But she also needs blood work in order to establish whether there is any bleeding, not bleeding problems, but clotting problems that could cause that too.
Let's say you didn't catch this. You weren't able to diagnose this. Is this a ticking time bomb for her? If
we're assuming that, pulmonary emboli can be fatal. And so if she's not on the Coumadin, for example, she could certainly have the clot reform or increase in size or have another clot, and that can obstruct blood flow to the lungs, and people die from that. So yes, it is a serious condition and has to be treated quite aggressively.
Okay. All right, let's get back to the phone calls. Dr. Barry Dworkin here. It's the Wednesday house call. Mary.
Hi.
Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Thanks for hanging on the line.
That's fine.
Appreciate
Hi, Dr.
That.
Dworkin. Hi. I guess I was way off on this.
Okay. It's okay.
Well, I thought it might be gallbladder.
Well, that's all right. I mean, that's
because
the whole point.
I had that. And I thought I was having a heart attack, and I ended up in hospital, and they did all that, and my cardiac enzymes were elevated.
Right.
And finally, it was one good doctor that diagnosed it after many months.
Well, that's the good thing about talking about this, because it does raise awareness for different things.
Yeah.
And that's
what's, but anyway,
that's what's fun.
I'm glad you figured it out.
Okay.
Okay.
How are you doing, Mary?
Oh, I'm good.
Top
I'm
shape?
Good. Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks
right.
for calling.
Bye.
Let's go to Anne on line 5. Anne.
Hi. I was going to say pancreatitis, but then after listening, I think there's a lot, the blood tests, and that I think I'm wrong.
Well, pancreatitis also would give is more of a, it is an acute situation, gives you more abdominal pain, nausea, vomiting, and on an ultrasound would usually show you, if they did an ultrasound of the abdomen, because you would be having abdominal pain, would show you inflammation around the pancreas. It is a very serious condition when you have acute pancreatitis. Usually you're admitted to hospital. You're kept off eating anything. You're put on fluids. There are specific blood tests to look at enzymes that are reflective of pancreatic function or damage. So it's a good thought just in terms of pain in the area, but it's a little bit further down from the chest than you would expect.
Lori's up next on line 3. Lori.
Hi.
Hi.
Lori, how are you?
Hello, I'm fine.
That's good.
I was just thinking that lady sounded just like me a few years back.
Oh, yeah?
The pain and the shortness of breath.
You had an embolism as well, Lori?
Oh,
did you?
God, I don't know. But anyways, with that, everybody said it was gallbladder, like the other lady.
Right.
And the symptoms sounded an awful lot alike.
Mm-hmm.
So I bothered them so much that there had to be something wrong, because I'm not a sick person.
Right.
And they couldn't find anything wrong with me. Huh. I took every test going. But anyways, they went ahead and took my gallbladder out, and a week later, I'm back getting them again.
Uh-huh.
So that went on for, oh, God, a couple of years. And finally, they sent me to this, I think it was a new little doctor anyway. And he says, you've got wandering stones. They were embedded in the esophagus.
Uh-huh.
And he put me in and took his little neck down, however he did it. And
Never bothered me since.
All right. Well, that's good news, Lori. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Don on line four.
Hello.
Hi, Don.
Yeah, I sort of sounded a lot like a variant angina.
Yeah, it could. The problem is that there was no, you know, if you had angina, you normally wouldn't have elevated enzymes. Angina would mean that there's less blood flow to the heart, you get some pain, but there's no tissue damage per se. And cardiac enzymes usually go up when there is tissue damage. Part of the heart has died or been severely damaged.
It's certainly an excellent thought.
Just it just didn't match. And again, with angina, if there was angina, the definition for angina is something that lasts, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. If you stop, the pain goes away. Her pain kept on going a little bit. And also, EKG was normal. So if you had angina normally, although, you know, sometimes you can get EKGs that look normal, normally you'd see on the EKG something suggestive of angina, you know, something to show that the heart was being affected.
Okay, let's go to, is it Lorette?
Yes, it's Lorette.
Lorette, go ahead, ma'am.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, it's with regards to my mother, who's 89.
Mm-hmm.
And she's losing weight. She's lost her appetite a lot, but there's no concern for her health. Like, she had surgery in her mouth and things like that, so now she's just not eating.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know if there's a medication available, like through prescription, that will increase a person's appetite to encourage them to eat.
Well, the first thing is this specifically as a result of her surgery? Now, has she healed up from her surgery, or is this something new now where she's just not, where she's losing weight and doesn't want to eat?
Well, it's part of, due to surgery, it's mostly healed but not fully.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's now, it's at the point where she's just got into the habit. It's been so long since she's been able to eat actually properly because of the pain in her mouth, that now she doesn't have much of an appetite, and we're always trying to coax her. And, you know, it's just like a little kid, rather do anything but eat.
Well, has the pain disappeared? Is she feeling better
most
now?
Most of it, yes.
Well, I would still, there's really, in terms of stimulating appetite with medications, there really isn't any prescription medication that's going to stimulate appetite that much. I would also look into other things that could potentially reduce a person's appetite. Also, if she's had this condition where she's had pain and pain that's been persisting for quite some time, people can get depressed. They can also have other conditions that may have occurred at the same time that are contributing to her weight loss and also her lack of appetite. So I would look into other things, thyroid disease, other conditions that can affect mood. That would be my focus at the moment. And certainly it's important to get a person to eat, but I don't want to miss the boat on something else that could be contributing to this.
Well, a very busy hour.
Yeah.
Very interesting hour. Thanks for bringing that unusual case to our attention.
My pleasure.
Barry, you're back in on Sunday?
Back in on Sunday.
Sunday house call, Sunday at 4, here on 580 CFRA. Don't forget, as well, health headlines, 10 minutes before 7 during Maidley in the Morning, weekday mornings here on CFRA. This will be archived at CFRA.com as well.